Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, I'm here.
We'll fix that in post.
You can't hear me?
Hello there, and welcome to Ready to Unload with Cal and Sam Pete. As you heard at the top of the show, yes, we can hear you, Cal. We were having some technical difficulties getting the show off the ground tonight, but we're here.
Cal.
We are live. We are clearly being produced by Pop Culture PJ. It is episode number 3.31. We're going to have Brian Bassett from thejetsblog.com on the SNY network of blogs to talk about the Jets. We are live from Bayside, from Comac, almost sort of from Comac. Not really from Comac, because Cal is without any sort of internet, interwebs. So he's calling this one in old school, and PJ's exhausted. We had a week off, and PJ needs a 30-hour day. So it is Thursday night. It is 9:30. It is time for Ready to Unload with Cal and Sam Pete's New York Sports Talk podcast and otherwise. And let's just bring him in here. Let's just get him in here. Let's just quit playing around. That's right. For the 31st time this year, my partner in crime, my partner in grime, my partner in all things that rhyme with the chime of the bells of St. It's Cal. Cal Neva, Cal Pino, Caliente. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Steve.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm still in Comac.
Yes, but Comac is not working.
No. Well, the studios in Comac are not working. That's for sure.
That's correct. Is there some sort of strike?
Yeah. It's you know, when you deal with unions, it's...
Yeah.
It's no, ugly. You're...
Yeah. We take a week off, and I mean, gee whiz.
Oh, it's awful.
You know, well, it's good to have you. How was your week off? What did you do on sabbatical? Did you write a book?
Yeah,
did you
climb a mountain.
A plane? Did you climb a mountain?
I did.
Hey, you know what? Just don't wear any bracelets from your kids.
No.
The mountain.
Wouldn't want that to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, heavens forbid, you know, the guy wears bracelets that he's been wearing for, 23 starts.
Right. Now, all of a sudden, let's... Let's make them take it off. Let's make them cut them off also.
That's right.
You know?
Let's make R.A. Dickey cut off the bracelets that his daughters gave him when he was about to ascend Mount Kilimanjaro for charity. And he's been wearing them since January. He's having the season of a lifetime. He's the greatest story in baseball.
Mm.
You know what? Third inning? You got to cut those off.
Did you see when the umpires came out with pictures of his daughters and ripped them up in front of his face?
I did, and I thought that was a little over the top.
It just like ripped them up and then threw it in like confetti.
That's right. Sprinkled confetti down on him slowly.
Yeah, nice.
Cal, it's good to be back, man.
Yeah, you know, you take a week off and you really miss it.
I did. I had my big bachelor week at Citi Field. That went
bachelor
well.
Week. That was, you know, everybody was talking about that. We were looking forward to it so much. How'd that work out for you?
That went pretty good. I went 0-3.
Right.
Two of the games were blowouts. Really not a good representation of Met baseball.
Not good, huh?
It was.
Right. Seemed like a much better idea at the time, didn't it?
I'm gonna sum up Bachelor Week with 2 points, if I may.
Please.
The first was I announced Bachelor Week like 6 weeks ago, like right around the All-Star break. There were seven games over. Bachelor Week was happening. My wife was going to Texas for the week to visit her family with Wesley. And I made the plan to go to all six games of the Met homestand. They were riding high, Cal. What could go wrong?
What could go wrong? That's why you hype it 6 weeks in advance.
That's right.
Like Joey.
That's right. We had the t-shirts made and everything.
Can't miss.
It was like, it was a lot like Joey.
Right?
Exactly. Right down to me being a stereotypical Italian actor. It was right down to the T. So I, of course, they went into a swoon for the ages. Bachelor Week ruined, but I got to go through with it now because now I've made plans to go with separate people.
Well, but you altered it a little bit because originally the original plan of Bachelor Week was every game that week.
That's right.
So you didn't quite make it to every game.
No, I tempered that. It was I didn't go to all six games. I went to three of the six games on the homestand. I went to a game with you on the Tuesday night.
They lost.
They did, but it was a delight. It was great to go to a ball game with you. Of course, work kept me there till 8 o'clock. I didn't get there till the fourth inning. They were already down 4-0.
Well, that was great. Yeah, and that was very similar to the Saturday night game. But go on with your story.
Right. Then went on Friday night with Big Pauly. With my Uncle Tom, also known as Big Pauly. That was fantastic. That was great because he and I needed a little bonding time. It had been a while since we hung out. Of course, they lost. But we got to see Matt Harvey's first outing at Citi Field.
Right.
That was great. He pitched really, really well. Gave up a two-run home run in the first. That was it. Six innings, two runs, two hits, five walks. I was impressed. He is the anti-Pelfrey, by the way.
No. They will tell you that he is the second coming of Mike Pelfrey.
Yeah, he's the anti-Pelfrey. When it comes to mound demeanor, doggedness, toughness, bearing down, if that was Mike Pelfrey in his rookie year, he would have given up nine runs before we sat down.
So essentially, what you're saying is they're both tall.
That's correct. The similarities are they were both taken in the first round, highly touted draft picks in the top 10, actually.
Right.
And they're both tall.
And that's it.
That's where it ends.
Okay.
But that was great on Friday night, even though they lost. That was well worth it.
Well,
I got
You also told me that it was maybe the best weather night for a game you ever had.
One of the best weather nights I've had in recent memory for a game. I mean, it was supposed to rain. It was beautiful.
Nice.
Yeah. The weather was a delight. It was like San Diego. I thought I was watching a Padres game. It was like 82 degrees with a breeze, no humidity. I'm in shorts and a T-shirt. Nice, comfortable, a delight.
No humidity, no offense either.
That's correct. The humidity, that's right. At that point, I had seen a grand total of, I think, one run in 18 innings of baseball. No, they got a couple of runs in the game we went to, right? Would they lose that game 6-2? It wound up being or something like that.
It was 4-2.
Yeah. Oh, right. And they lost 4-2 in the Harvey game too.
Right.
Oh no, they got shut out that game.
Shut out.
Right. Then the next night we went with the guys because we had planned it.
Right.
And that was great. They were down 9-0 before we got to the seats, so that was good.
Mm.
Johan Santana.
9-0.
Nine.
Right.
That's right. 9-0 in the second inning. That's a three field goals. That's a touchdown and a field goal and a missed extra point.
Yeah, that included a home run by Freddie Freeman over the apple.
That included a home run by Freddie Freeman that almost hit us in center field.
That's true. We were, you know, I was at the taqueria with our buddy Dan, and had the taqueria not been there, we would have been hit by that home run.
That's correct. You and Nello almost got drilled by that 470-foot Freddie Freeman home run. That was one of those deals where we were behind at Citi Field. You can actually look in and when you're behind center field, there's a huge – that's where all the food is and stuff. It's a great area. And you can watch the game there on the huge TV, but also look in.
Right.
And we're watching on the TV, and I'm like, that ball's coming right at us. You know, and then you run up a little bit to the railing, and you're like, oh, there it is.
Yeah,
I can maybe catch that.
450 feet away.
Yeah, that was a bomb ski.
Yeah.
It was good though to go with the guys and had a good time. Again, they got killed, but went to a game with some fellas. Bottom line, end of story, final report on Bachelor Week at Citi Field, which again, the T-shirts look really good.
They were sharp.
The T-shirts came out really nice. It looks like a a concert tee.
Right. With the three games and their corresponding results on the back.
That's right. It looks like a concert tee. Right. We shall see no runs. That's in quotations. That's it. But anyway, it was fun. So that's what I did on my way.
We shall see no runs.
We shall see no runs. It sounds like a Yes album. Piper at the Gates of... Is that Yes? No, that's Pink Floyd. Piper at the Gates of Dawn. PJ is having a conniption right now that we're talking about Pink Floyd and Yes, and he's somehow not on the air right now.
I know.
We'll bring him on in a second. How was your week off? You became an uncle again?
I did. Was that during... I guess it was during that week.
I think it was right before, maybe.
It was before, yes. I became an uncle.
But we didn't... Now, what time is this? You're an uncle for the 37th time.
I am now a five-time uncle.
Is that like gold gloves?
It's kind of like like the golden gloves.
That's right.
Is that what it is? The boxing, the golden gloves?
The golden gloves. He's a five. No, but you're like a five-time gold glover.
Right.
Five-time all-star, five-time uncle.
Right. Five-time manager of the year.
Correct. Five-time uncle of the year. Have you won Uncle of the Year yet?
I've been Father of the Year a couple times.
Nice.
Along with, millions of others.
That's correct. Well, you have the T-shirt and the mug.
I got the mug to prove it.
That's right.
It's a ceremony when they award that mug to you.
It's dignified. It's a small, dignified ceremony.
It is. Usually there's milk being spilled and screaming and
somehow
crying.
It's usually the second weekend of June.
Third.
Or the third weekend. Right. Well, there you go. I've never won Father of the Year, so clearly I don't know when it's awarded.
Well, because you always fail to get your application in on time.
It's like a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Is a deadline.
Do you know, for a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, you get nominated.
Who nominates you?
Oh, I have a new favorite word, by the way. I'll work it in later.
Okay. I'll know it when I hear it, won't I?
Right. It would be perfect here, but there's this, like, sort of a betting story behind it with football, so I want to save it.
Good.
But you get nominated by a group of people or whatever, and then it has to go to, like, the City of Hollywood and the Chamber of Commerce.
Wow.
And then they decide that you're going to get a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
So, like, if the Walk of Fame just happened to be in Bayside, it would be like the Bayside Chamber of Commerce would be voting on it?
That's absolutely right.
You don't have to have any sort of, special...
You don't have to talk to the Grauman Chinese Theater people. You don't have to... Can we say that? Can you still say Chinese Theater?
I don't know.
Is it the Asian American Theater now?
Well, no, because it's the name of the theater.
Right. So we're okay there. PC.
You're okay, yeah. Like, you don't call it Asian-American food. Chinese food.
That's correct. Although, that's next.
Oh.
Gosh, I love Chinese food. Do you love Chinese food?
I do. Not as much as my wife.
Oh, is she a junkie for it?
Junkie. She'll eat it for breakfast.
I love it.
If given half the chance.
I absolutely love it. Oh, my goodness. And I have the fortune, again, of having that wife from Texas. So all of a sudden you have different, Chinese food for an Italian guy from Long Island, from Comac, with the Jewish people, the Italians, the Chinese food's like a way of life. That's like Friday night, you're either getting Chinese food or you're getting pizza. I mean, that's this is what happens.
That's right. And now listen, go to Chinese food meal. Tell me what it is.
Excellent question. This is a perfect time to bring in PJ too.
And
we do have Brian Bassett coming up from the jetsblog.com on the SNY TV network of blogs. He's good. We've been trying to get him for a long time. It's going to be awesome, Brian. I'm very, very excited to.
I'm excited too.
Yeah, to like have positive Jet talk.
Is there such a thing?
I said to him today, I said, let's be the exception to the current rule. Let's have a nice, let's have a conversation nice. You know, maybe have a glass of wine. Anyway, go to, there he is. Way to nuke Lelouch, my friend. Way to announce your presence with authority. Here he is, the Bishop, Pop Culture PJ. Hello, Peach.
Good evening. Hi.
How was your, how was it? We have a pending question. We'll get to it in a second. But how was your, how was your sabbatical?
I heard yes, Pink Floyd and Chinese food. It's like a tailor-made.
It's like wheelhouse PJ.
That's also known as your senior year of college.
Ooh.
Your first senior year.
Blood pressure issues.
Right, your first senior year, right.
Right. Oh, yeah. Well.
Hey, look.
Senior year A, senior year B.
Keep doing it till you get it right. They can't kick you out if you keep paying.
No, they did.
No, they got wise.
They called me up and said, enough.
Right. We need to know your go-to Chinese food meal. We need to know, but first, and most importantly, I know you had a crazy week off. You were on vacation, like a literal vacation, not just
climbed,
a vacation from ourselves.
Climbed some mountains, you know.
We grow mustaches. You went up to New Hampshire and climbed mountains.
Oh, he literally climbed a mountain.
That's correct.
Oh.
And
yeah. I was joking.
No, he went. They climbed a mountain. He's very sport goofy when you're not looking.
More than one.
Multiple mountains.
Yeah.
How do you not have climb every mountain queued up, by the way?
Ford every stream.
Right. You'll just sing it. Hey, before we get to a go-to Chinese food meal, because that is a magnificent question. How did Lily do today? How did Lily do?
Oh, oral surgery?
Yeah.
It was okay.
Oral surgery today, Cal.
Ooh, that's
you have this to look forward to.
No, I don't.
Yeah, you know, it's all in the name of orthodonture, which I think we've all agreed that when the archaeologists look back on us 2,500 years from now, that's going to be the barbarism of of American culture. It's going to be orthodonture.
Right.
The way bound feet are looked upon.
That's right. Orthodonture
did,
is going to be like the bracelets.
They did their kids' teeth?
The bracelets up the neck. Right.
Right.
That's correct.
Right.
Wow.
Neck lengthening. Great.
Was this torture of some sort? No. You paid thousands of dollars for this.
Right.
Thousands of dollars.
Was this some sort of medieval punishment? They got rid of the stockade and they made something very small.
Let me get this straight. You're not leeching anymore, but you're putting a retainer in.
No.
And screws.
Let me tell you this. You're not squeamish, are you?
I'm not, but you got to go answer the call. The guy's calling in.
Oh, there he is.
There he is.
We'll talk
go
about
get him.
This later.
We will talk about this later.
Maybe.
Major oral surgery, Cal.
Yeah, I'm having a daughter who's close to that age. I'm squeamish, so.
Yeah.
Maybe take that one offline.
Then you're not going to want to hear at all.
No.
What they had to do to poor Lily today.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
I don't want to know.
Ladies and gentlemen, don't let your children suck their thumb. At all. Like, if I see Wesley doing it, forget it. It stops immediately.
That ship has sailed over here.
Yeah. Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy. Then you're not going to want to hear this at all. Well, it's
no,
good.
I might cut out early. If you know. I might use a couple of personal hours tonight and just kind of.
Cal's taking a personal day. So to sum up, we'll talk to Pete later in the show about the dentistry and stuff like that. And also, Danny is really close to his Taekwondo black belt, Cal. Seriously.
Wow.
He's 7, folks.
That's unbelievable.
I know. But he has to like beat up like 17 guys. I don't know. It's really involved to get his black belts. It's to catch a fly with chopsticks or something. I don't know. It's very involved. Cal, we're gonna about to have Brian Bassett on from thejetsblog.com. which is something I think you've been reading for a long time. I've been really reading it for a long time. It's couched into that SNY.TV network of blogs, which we frequent, you know, all the time. We've been trying to get Brian for a while. We're going to talk about the Jets. To sum up in the big unload, Bri, you're a five-time uncle.
Yeah.
Congratulations again. We can't wait to see the plaque. That's going to be great.
That? Yeah, it's like the Stanley Cup. They just add another ring.
Bachelor week at Citi Field, a moderate success. Not so much with the wins and losses, but I had a great time seeing the guys and going to the park every night like I didn't have a care in the world. When I have many cares.
But
we discovered in that week off I don't like to be alone. Still.
I was just going to say, Bachelor Week, you know, a welcome end to Bachelor Week also.
That's correct. A welcome end to Bachelor Week.
Right.
Because, I went Jerry Maguire there for a couple nights. I do not do well alone.
You ate a whole wheel of cheese.
I'm just not even mad. It's amazing. We're going to talk about the Mets later on in the show and the Yankees, who are doing miraculous things with all the injuries that they have, again, shockingly. But without further ado, let's bring in Brian Baffert. I don't know if Brian knows this band. I've been dying to use this band for intro music. Here it is. I don't know. And I went with a song called Option. Little nod towards the Wildcat. The Option. I don't know. It's a stretch, but I just wanted to get Gomez involved. So here he is. We've been trying to get him on for a long time. Welcome to Ready to Unload with Cal and Stampede. I am Stampede, Brian. Cal is over there.
Hello.
Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for coming on, man.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on the show. I appreciate it. You guys were talking about dental work. I actually had to get a filling done today. So maybe we'll start with that breaking news.
let's go right now to the RTU newsroom. Breaking. You should have, Brian. You should have tweeted that
I should have. Yeah, that would have been good. That would have been all over. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it, guys. And I know you've had some of the other folks. I'm following in the footsteps of greats like Ted Berg and some of the other fellows. So I'm happy to finally make an appearance.
Beautiful. Yeah, the big ones. You know, the big guys, the Cerrone,
that's right,
the Ted Burks of the world. Yeah, we're talking
exactly
about big people. No, seriously,
right.
You're our first Jet blogger on, which is, got to talk about the Jets, and that's fantastic. And I want to jump right in with a couple of things, Bri, if I may call you that.
Please. Please do.
I'll tell you what.
It's confusing, though, because I don't know who you're talking to.
Well, you're Cal.
That's true.
I mean, we've done 115 shows. You're Cal. I only call you Brian when I'm very angry with you.
Yeah, but I've been Brian for like 38 years, so.
That's true. Well, you know, around these parts, you're Cal. Well, good job. Way to confuse everybody.
That's all right. I'm Cal. Go ahead, Steve.
I'm Cal.
Sorry, Brian.
One of the things, Bassett, that we wanted to talk about was, first and foremost, the Jets break camp today. They had their time up in Cortland. They were dying to be back there. You were up there for the whole time? Were you up for?
No. I was just up for a couple days. I do the blog. It's a fun thing for me, but unfortunately, you know, whereas Cerrone gets to kind of do it every day for his full time job, I have a full time job and I do it as a fun side project. And so I was up there for the start of camp. Keep on top of stuff. But yeah, I was up there for like kind of the first weekend, like 4 days, something like that.
Okay, cool. So you had a chance though to be up there a little bit and we're going to get to you later because I have a ton of questions, and so does Brian Calvi about how bloggers are treated in NFL circles and stuff like that. I've actually talked to Jeff, Green Lantern Jet. A little bit about Twitter about there's a distinct difference, it seems, between the MLB guys and Cerrone and Berg and the experience that they're having with the Mets and being welcome and getting passes and getting access and stuff. So I do want to touch on that later. But back in Cortland, Brian and I have talked a ton on this show about how important that was to be for this team, especially with Tim Tebow coming in and the circus and the thing and the whole thing. Did you get an immediate feel that it was different than camp last year, that they were happy to be back, that there was a collegiality that was missing?
I would say I feel like, in years past, it definitely was different. I think one of the biggest differences of kind of the Rex Ryan, Mark Sanchez, regime is just kind of one of the big things I noticed was Mark's demeanor on the field and just kind of the way he would act. I think one of the most interesting things is in years past, I would see him like carrying the pads or the helmets of other guys, like kind of leaving the field or whatever. And like, you understand what he's trying to do. He's trying to be one of the guys, kind of help out his guys, that kind of thing. And I saw his dad doing that for him. So it's like, it's clearly something where it's in his family where they're big about helping and that sort of thing. But at least this is the first time at camp where I kind of saw him really taking command of the huddle, of screaming at guys, of getting over, like showing Stephen Hill, like kind of standing and saying, this is how you need to catch the ball. Let me show you with my hands. And, this is what the placement should be and all that sort of thing. And I never saw him do any of that before. And he definitely was kind of, taking more of a command of his offense, more than I've seen him in years past. And everybody else noticed it too. So it was certainly Mark's team coming in, and he wanted to make that clear that, hey, this is my team, Tebow's here or whatever, but it's my team.
Well, Brian, the rest of the team are all saying the right things. The veterans on the team are saying that this is Mark's team, and you said, you've seen a difference in the way he's approached camp this year. What was your impression of the way the other guys on the team responded to the way Mark came into camp this year and his new approach?
I think they responded to it for the most part. They were all listening, especially when you think about his receivers and even running backs. I mean, who's there that's been there longer than him, or been in the league even longer than him? And really there's no one. Santonio Holmes is the exception. Dustin Keller might be an exception, but pretty much everybody else, Stephen Hill, Joe McKnight, Patrick Turner, Jeremy Curley, all those guys, they all have come in at the time he came in or after him. Whereas in years past, there's guys like Jericho, there's guys like Braylon Edwards, there's Derek Mason, whoever it is, there's all these guys that he kind of feels like, hey, I need to, for lack of a better term, but basically, kind of justify to them that, apologize for being a quarterback. I don't really think he feels that way anymore.
Right, which is great.
And they do respond to it. Yeah, that's what you want, right? Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, this is what – one of the things that kills me, and I do have a question about the what you just brought up about the receivers that are there, because everybody's going crazy pants about this. And, if the season started today – well, it doesn't. But before I get to that, every one of the things that was sort of crazy about the Tebow situation was the team was, and look, let's face it, they can't do much right in the media, but the team was killed at the end of last season for not having any competition for Mark Sanchez. And Sanchez, the articles for Manish Mehta about he's coddled, he's this, he's that. He doesn't work hard, all this sort of stuff, which you've been around the team. You've had some access to the team. You must have read that and been like, it's nonsense. And because everybody else came out and said he's like the hardest worker in the world. So, but they got killed for not having competition for him. Well, they brought in competition for him. Now, granted, we could talk about all the ancillary crap that Tebow brings with him. And I thought that's one of the reasons the GQ article was spot on. And we'll get to Tebow because you have to dedicate some time to that. But I think his reaction so far from a distance and from basically following him on the Jets blog has been exactly what you want to see. It has been him taking charge of the team, and it has been the result that they wanted from getting him competition.
I think you're exactly right. Yeah, I think, you know, when Mark Brunell is behind him on the depth chart, you know, I mean, he was barely in the league, right? And, I mean, was he helpful to him? Yeah, absolutely he was a help to him. He had a lot of experience, and he could calm him down, and he could kind of be another quarterback coach or whatever. But, you know, if Mark's injured, you know, is that the guy you really want there? Or and right, so you have this interesting dynamic now where it's like if Mark is at, let's say, 70%, you know, if he's injured, he's at 70%, and the coaches and everybody's trying to decide what they're going to do about Sanchez, like, you know, if it's Tim Tebow or it's Mark Brunell, like, your tolerance for going for the backup is much higher. You know, you're much more likely to go towards the backup than you would for a guy like Mark Brunell. You're like, well, yeah, you know, we'll run Mark Sanchez out there at 70%, whatever. So right, I think the point is, absolutely, he felt the pressure, and he felt the heat. And then, right, there's also the sense of, you know, he's going to be, Mark will be, you know, be removed from center, let's say, even if he's, you know, playing wide receiver or whatever, you know, in the Wildcat package or red zone or Tebow package, whatever you want to call it. Like, there's times where he's not going to be the guy taking the snap. And so, in his mind, you know, any opportunity, he doesn't want to relinquish that, I'm sure. No quarterback would. But at the same time, the only way for him to, mitigate that is basically to say, you know what, I'm playing so well that they don't need to do this.
Right, and also...
And so, right, so, yeah, so it's an all-around kind of raises the bar for him. Yeah.
Right, and also we don't know what that package is going to look like. Again, we have no idea what that – I've been arguing with people for 3 months. Not arguing, having discussions, animated discussions. Not arguing. We're negotiating. It's a negotiation. I've been having discussions with Jet fans and the like about how we have no idea what the package is going to look like. It could include the both of them in the backfield at the same time, and
right,
you don't know who's going to get the snap from center. It could include Tebow as a running back, as an H-back. With Sanchez under, you know, to say that he's just going to run the Wildcat and Sanchez is either going to have to come out or go to receiver is really, really just sort of rabble-rousing. It really is, because you don't know, and they're, you know, they have a weapon like that. They're going to use it as I'm now interested to see how they're going to use it, because he hasn't been running the Wildcat, Tim Tebow. He's been running the single-wing option. It's a different offense. So I'm actually excited to see what he'll do in the Wildcat. Bri has a question about the receivers, right?
Well, no, I have a follow-up on Tebow.
Oh, okay, my bad.
No, I didn't until you just brought this up.
that was
having,
improvisation.
No, it's good. It's well, you know, having Brian on and Brian having the benefit of seeing these guys so far, we haven't seen Tebow that much. We haven't seen him live. Just from seeing what you saw out of him over the last couple of weeks, do you get the sense that he's athletic enough to really, you know, play a role on this team? Obviously, he's the backup quarterback, but he came to be much more than just the backup quarterback. And from what you were able to see, do you see how he could really contribute to this team, you know, the 15 to 20 plays a game?
Yeah. I mean, I do. And I think, it answers both of those kind of thoughts where, yeah, what is Tebow's role and right, what do we know about the Wildcat or single wing or whatever they run? And right. I think that, I mean, what I would say is, Tim Tebow is like the greatest, he might not be the greatest running back, but he's the greatest throwing running back, you know, in the league right now.
That's right.
You know,
So,
you look at his stats over the last couple of years or whatever. I mean, he's averaging 5 yards on the ground, and the way he does it is because, I mean, he's a big dude, and he is massive. I mean, you saw the, you know, the shirtless thing that everybody did, but, like, I mean, he's a massive, massive dude, and so for like, a safety or a cornerback to try and just, you know, tackle him if he gets to the past the edge, like, it's really hard for them. And so it's easy for him to make yards on the ground. But, you know, you think about kind of what he would do versus what, like, a Ronnie Brown would do kind of when they were running the Wildcat back in the day. Like, Ronnie Brown is a great running back, but he's not or was a great running back, but he's not a good thrower compared to Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow is a terrible thrower for a quarterback, but he's a fantastic thrower for a running back.
Right.
So I think that's
like
the thing that people I think that's the thing that people forget is that, like, you know what? Yes, he's not the greatest quarterback. Like, he really struggles with those kind of touch short, you know, 10 to 15 yard passes. Like, I mean, and maybe it was the rusting kind of, getting himself kind of into camp or whatever, but I mean, he threw some passes the first couple of days where, I mean, he almost got guys killed, like literally killed. Like, they were just bad. And
wow,
even in the
ball,
first
right.
preseason game, yeah, it's hospital ball, exactly.
Right.
You know, and even in that first preseason game, I mean, some of those passes were behind guy and that sort of stuff. So I mean, yeah, can you ask him to run the ball or, you know, kind of let someone go deep and he can up it? I mean, he actually has more touch on those passes than he does on the short stuff. So,
yeah.
So like, it's this interesting thing where I definitely think he can play a role. I mean, people have been kind of talking, will he be in the punt game? I mean, he was taking snaps in kind of the punt unit as the protector, and he even took a couple, you know, I'm not supposed to say this, but you know, but basically
yeah.
he took a couple, you know, they were practicing trick plays and
right.
he took
don't
a couple
worry.
Runs.
It's not the,
run,
it's not the
yeah.
fans. Don't worry about it.
he took a couple runs. He took a couple runs out of the punt formation. And
yeah.
I don't think I saw any throws, but you know, he
but
was
you
doing
could.
Stuff.
I mean,
that,
he could. Why would you not run him
yeah.
out there as the personal punt protector every time? And you
right.
bring me to something that Brian and I have been saying since they made the trade, and then they made the announcement that he was going to be the personal punt protector and on special teams, and they may use him on kickoff and stuff. To me, and to Cal, that says everything you need to know about what they think of him as a quarterback. And if they really thought, and this goes along with my premise that I think Rex Ryan and Tony Sperano were approached by Mike Tannenbaum, who was under a directive from Woody Johnson to go get Tim Tebow. And I mean, I really feel that's the way it went down. I feel like Tannenbaum went to them and said, look, Woody said, go get him. Can you guys use him? And Rex being Rex, you know, said, yeah, of course. And Sperano being Sperano said, yeah, of course I can use him. I could have a party with him. You know, I can finally
right.
have a Wildcat running back that can throw. And so
right.
they went
and
made
I
the
think-
trade.
That's exactly it. And I think that's the thing about it that's so intriguing. Like, you know, I don't want to, like, you know, on the blog every day, I try not to talk about, I mean, you have to talk about Tim Tebow, but I almost try and limit it as much as I can. But that's one of the most interesting things about him is exactly what you just said is that, you know, I think where the Wildcat ended up dying for the Dolphins or any teams around the league was
yeah.
in that you ended up basically having running backs who never threw the ball. And that was the case with Brad Smith. I mean, I love Brad Smith. Like, don't get me wrong. I love Brad Smith. But, like, I mean, if you ever watch any of the college tape or just, I mean, they basically were afraid to let him throw the ball because he just didn't have, like, that, you know, kind of precision strike throw. He would kind of float the ball. And, you know, it just wasn't very good. So Tebow's a better thrower than Brad Smith was. Now, Brad Smith is probably much better in space and much faster, you know, than Tim Tebow is. But the difference is sooner or later, you get to a point where teams are just like, you know what, if they're never going to throw out of this formation, there's an easy way to defend it. But, right, if you have a guy who can actually throw a long ball and you have a guy like Stephen Hill who can go get that long ball, you know, that changes the dynamic completely.
Yeah. And you know, my last thing on that was simply, if they really genuinely brought Tim Tebow in here to challenge Mark Sanchez for the starting quarterback position and thought he was a viable option to go to over Mark Sanchez, there's no way he's playing special teams. There's no way. They're not going to risk some... They're not going to risk some guy teeing off on it. You know, Charlie Casserly said it last week, Brian Bassett and Cal. We were off last week. Charlie Casserly said last week, you know, to me, the backup quarterback for that team is Greg McElroy.
Yeah.
That if Mark Sanchez was out for a long period of time, hopefully not, but if he was, they would probably go to McIlroy and leave Tebow in the role that he's going to play and leave him in that utility wildcat run option playmaker position that they're putting him in. Charlie Casley said partially because he doesn't think Tim Tebow has a mastery of Sperano's regular offense, but also because that's where they want to use him. They don't view him as a viable every down quarterback. And again, you know, the proof is in the pudding. You're not going to run out there on special teams. You know, that's me.
I agree. And I think Mike Tannenbaum is a big proponent of, you know, utilizing every roster spot as many times as you can. And, you know, one of the worst roster spots in terms of actual utilization is the backup quarterback spot. So this basically gives you another running back, you know, whatever, H-back, punt protector, whatever you want to call him. But, right, I think, yeah, as you said, the proof is in the pudding, unless, and we hope as a Jets fan, I certainly don't want to get into that scenario, but there's only one way to know what they would actually do, and it's if Mark Sanchez is injured. But at the same time, right, I think it would be crazy if they basically I see Cashley's point. I think he's got a very valid point. Could you imagine if they didn't make Tebow the starter? Like, what would happen? Like, it would be crazy. So, right. I agree. Like, it's not an issue if Mark Sanchez stays healthy, but right, the backup quarterback spot is basically a worthless spot. So, put someone there who can actually, you know, get you 40 yards a game or whatever. And that'll be good.
All right, so we got the quarterbacks covered, but who are they going to throw the ball to? Because there seems to be a little bit of an issue with depth at the wide receiver spot. Are they going to go out and get another body just for depth? Are they waiting for some of the first cuts of the training camp around the league, or are they confident in the kids that they brought in this year? Jordan White and Stephen Hill, that they're going to be the guys to play the position this year?
I mean, I think that, right, I mean, a lot of those guys are just not healthy right now, and, you know, Rex called it today, like the MASH unit or whatever,
And White got hurt today too, right?
Yep, he got, I think, something with his knee. It was had big bags of ice on it and stuff, and so... It's not good, but I certainly think that, I mean, if there's any solace, and I mean, I don't know, we haven't really seen Sperano's offense and how he's going to use it, but I'm just thinking back to kind of what we saw in Miami. Like, he didn't use a ton of, like, slot receiver, like third, fourth receiver stuff. He did a lot of two receiver double backs, you know, two tight ends or, you know, extra blocking back. Like, in some cases, he would even put out, like, a running back and two blocking backs, kind of like a reverse wishbone kind of thing. And so, like, my point is, like, he tends to keep more guys closer in. So, like, I think if you have two or three guys, like, that you're confident in, that's probably going to be good. And then anything else is gravy, and they'll kind of, you know, mix it in. But it's interesting because, I mean, I think there's Stephen Hill, you watch the reports, he had, you know, kind of people said he's had an up and down camp. But, like, what I saw, I was super impressed with him. I mean, he's a big dude. He's fast as anything. I mean, he's catching touchdowns over Darrell Revis in practice, you know, routinely, like, you know, not every day, but you know, certainly it's happened a number of times in camp. Which is impressive, and you know, and he's certainly you know, like, he's kind of got the right mentality. I mean, I saw him a couple times. He's running routes. He ran the wrong route. He turns around. He says, "Hey, I ran a, you know, whatever they call it, a 14. What was that? You know, it was a 16. Oh, it was a 16. Okay, well, how does that work?" And, you know, he and the wide receiver coach are talking about it. So, like, he definitely is out there trying to get better, trying to understand the offense. Now, is he going to be an 80 reception guy this year? No, but, you know, if he has 40 receptions or 50 receptions, then he's kind of like a Torrey Smith was for Baltimore last year. I think that's all they need from him.
Yeah, then, if you get 50 receptions out of him, you're ecstatic.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, Santonio Holmes is going to want the ball more because that's who he is. And, you know, I mean, so I think he'll get the chance to get those passes and with Hill across, you know, the formation from him. He's not Braylon Edwards, but you're going to have to respect Stephen Hill a lot more than teams respected Plaxico Burress last year.
Yeah.
That'll help get Santonio open. And then right behind those guys, I mean, who knows what's up with Curley.
I was going to say, Brian, I got to be honest with you. I'm not a Curley fan. I don't know why I'm not sold on him. I haven't been since last year, and I'd like to believe the guy can turn into see, this is the problem I think they have right now with the wide receiver position. I love Braylon Edwards.
Mm. Oh, I loved him too. I loved him more than Holmes.
Yeah, as did I. I said it on the show. I wanted them to sign him instead of Holmes. I have always been a big fan of his since the Michigan days. When they made that trade for him, I was ecstatic. I was a big Braylon guy. I can see why, you know, and then you see him on Hard Knocks, and he said, who's the guy in your back pocket, Rex Ryan? Like, he says, like, who should I call that would tell me to sign you? And he's like, Rex Ryan and the Dolphins GM. Yeah, I'm not going to call him.
No.
I'm not going to call Rex Ryan. But I can see almost where somebody made a great point. I can't remember. It was one of the tweeters. It might have even been Green Lantern Jet, but made a great point that Hill and Edwards, very similar skill set in terms of size, blocking. You don't want to bring Braylon Edwards in here and maybe take away reps, take away valuable time. And Hill should serve the same purpose for Holmes, which was 2 years ago when Sanchez was super effective on deep balls because you had Braylon Edwards drawing double coverage either down the middle of the field or on the sideline that allows Holmes to operate underneath. You'd love to see all that again, and Holmes gets his 70 or 80 catches, and 60 of them are on slants. That's all well and good, but Cal knows where I'm going right now.
I know exactly where you're going.
Yeah. We have this feeling about Mr. Tannenbaum. And of course Rex as well. Rex Ryan and his coaching staff as well. They seem to have done this a bit, and that is rather than acquiring depth for a position, they sort of have a seeming, we're not there. But it seems to the outsider a junkie fan, that they have an arrogance about the guys that they have there and their coaching staff. And it's like, we can coach them up. We don't need to go out and get depth in a position. We have guys that we like, and we have the best coaching staff in football, and we can coach them up. And that, to me, last year,
offensive line. Robert Turner goes. I freaked out when Robert Turner got injured this year. I freaked out because I was like, "There's no backup center. What happened?" And then we found out what happened. And
that's right.
They had no answer for it. Yeah, absolutely.
And Cal and I firmly believe that ruined the season. That ruined.
Agreed.
The season. Nick Mangold getting hurt and them having a short training camp, no time in Cortland. And having no cohesiveness, and the offensive line was a disaster after that, a disaster for the rest of the season. They never recovered. So he got some depth for the offensive line this year. I'm not upset with the guys that they brought in, and they went out and tried to make the right tackle spot a competition. But they seem to be doing that again at wide receiver and running back. I read a great – I can't remember where I read it. But I sent it to you, Cal. The idea that if your team is built on the running game,
right,
then you know the good teams, what they're built on, they go get a crap load of that.
Right, the depth is in the strength of your team.
Right, that's right. If you know, like the Patriots with the tight end, the offense is built around the tight end. They went and got 9 tight ends.
Yeah,
you know the Packers, the team is built on the passing game. They have 37 wide receivers in camp. You know,
right.
The Jets are supposed to be this ground and pound running attack, and I don't see the depth there at, you know, now they've been ravaged by injuries at the wide receiver spot, but I don't see the depth there at running back either. I mean, To believe in Bilal. Thank you.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's a great point. And I mean, I think I certainly can't say with this, you know, definitiveness, yes, this group is amazing. But I mean, I think you think about the group they had. Let's see. Let's go back to 2009, right? So they had Thomas Jones, and they had Sean Green, and that was really it. And they never threw the ball to the running backs. Never, never, never that year. They just let them run. And it was basically they ground Thomas Jones down to the point where they're like, all right, he's basically dead. So now we need to, like, put Sean Green in the game. And then, right, and then Sean Green gets injured, and, you know, basically they lost the game against the Colts because, my opinion, they lost that game because they didn't have Sean Green.
I could agree with that.
Yeah. And so you know, you kind of go forward, you know, the next couple of years, and they start picking up guys. They pick up Joe McKnight, who, you know, everybody as a rookie, like, killed because he was that shape and all that sort of thing. But, I mean, what I would say, like, kind of doing the numbers and previewing this season, like, I think Joe McKnight is ready for some big things. I really do. Like, as a third down back, I mean, maybe a little bit more than a third down back if they need to give Sean Green a spell. But, like, the numbers he put up, I can't even remember, but he only had a very small number of receptions last year. But in terms of his productivity, he was, like, almost as productive as guys who got a lot more receptions, like Ryan Matthews, right, in San Diego. Like, he had, like, similar, like, you know, kind of, like, what do they call this, you know, advanced statistics stuff. He had similar numbers to Ryan Matthews, which is pretty impressive when you think about the kind of player he is. So like, what I would say is, like, I feel pretty comfortable with their third down back, you know, or kind of pass-catching back. And Sean Green has gotten a lot better in that regard, too. So that opens up things for what he can do. And, you know, we know what he can kind of do between the tackles. And then Bilal Powell, you know, last year people killed him. And, I mean, I was at camp and I was at the sidelines and I was talking to people, other reporters, and they were, you know, giving me the eye rolls for Bilal Powell. You know, that guy is slow. That guy is terrible. You know, he runs backwards. You know, he's so slow. So it's like, and I'm like, he was good. Like, did you see him at Louisville? Did you see him, like, kind of Senior Bowl? Did you see all that stuff? You know, I'm friends with a lot of guys who do the, you know, like the draft circuit, and they go to the Senior Bowl, and they go to all that kind of stuff. And you know, some good friends of mine who were like, Al's legit. Like, he's a legit player. He's going to need some time, but he's legit. And so I think we've seen this preseason so far, like, hey, he's actually looked pretty good. But again, you know, it's just practice. Who knows? But I mean, I like Bilal Powell a lot. And then, This guy they got this year, Terrence Gannaway, Connor seems to be kind of inconsistent. Like, he's definitely good, but he's a blocker, you know. But it sounds like he's kind of having an inconsistent camp, so that's not great. But the other guy they got, Gannaway, who played with Robert Griffin III, I mean, he's much more the, like, you guys remember Jameel McClain, like, from the Ravens? He's, like, that big fullback type who can run the ball. But I don't know that they'll actually use him to run the ball unless they're just so ravaged by depth that they would do that. But, you know, he's kind of a, you know, if you need 2 yards, he'll get you 3 yards. If you need 6 yards, he'll get you 3 yards. Kind of a running back. So you feel
like there's enough there.
Yeah.
You feel like as far as running back goes, there's enough there. Well, so Sean Green takes a beating. I mean, Sean Green takes a beating. He does.
He takes
a beating. I don't think anybody believes in him. Necessarily.
It's like he's done enough to, like, you know, keep us kind of, like, you know, teased, but right, it's never been, you see kind of a full, you know, 1,400-yard season from him or something like that. It's just like he starts slow or he ends slow or something, or he gets injured, or it's always something with him. But, I mean, when he's on, he's on. I would say I think it swings on Bilal Powell is what I would say. And I think the other thing to think about is, you know, hopefully Green won't get so ground down because they do have Tebow, you know, coming back full circle on Tebow. Like, you know, he will carry the ball, you know, maybe five times a game and, you know, pick up 25 yards or something. So, like, who knows? I mean, yeah, they will. I mean, he's not going to. Tebow's not going to carry the ball 20 times, but you know, if he carries it 3 to 5 times a game, that's, you know, three less.
Over the course of the season, that's
90.
Right. I think they consider him part of the running game. I do.
Right. Absolutely.
I think they consider Tebow in that equation.
Yeah.
I just want to go back, not to beat a dead horse, but it's just so baffling on the Braylon Edwards thing. And you know, Steve and I talk about it all the time, and we have our theories as to why they didn't even bring him in for a look. It just seemed like a perfect fit after last year with Plaxico, and then they didn't bring Plaxico back this year, and Braylon Edwards was looking for a job. The Jets needed some depth at receiver. They needed to make things a little more comfortable for Sanchez. The fit just seemed perfect. But Brian, do you have any idea why they didn't even give him a look?
I mean, I think from everything I saw and kind of heard and talked to folks about, they were interested in him, but I think what they wanted to see was they wanted to see how the draft played out, and Edwards himself, you know, he kind of said, I can't remember what it was like February or March, he did an interview with, I think someone from the New York Times. It's like a long, it was great, but it was like a long form video interview. And one of the things he said during that interview was like, I need to get my body right before I sign anywhere. And
right.
And like that to me sets off an alarm. That's either one of two things that's happening. Either he really truly believes that, or no one believes that he's healthy, and so he's kind of playing the PR, you know, whatever. This is his PR spin for why he's not currently signed, you know, after being cut. And so, I mean, either way you slice it, like the point is no one was really beating down his door to get him. And I like him. I like him in the Jets offense. I think he'd be great in this current offense too. But I think the Jets really wanted to see how the draft played out, and they had obviously prioritized wide receiver, as we saw that they did with Stephen Hill. And then once they got Stephen Hill, they're like, you know what, there's no need. And you know, with him and kind of this, you know, Chaz Schilling, you know, whatever. But like they just felt like we'll have enough, and we won't, as you kind of said earlier, we won't impede the progress of our rookie receiver with someone like Braylon kind of
right.
off the team.
I feel like I feel like there's a and I was extraordinarily disappointed they didn't sign him. I feel like there's a but. I guess I can understand it. There's a number of things at work here for me with this team that having been a lifelong fan and really consuming a great deal of training camp. And of course, Brian and I, Cal and I are both Mets fans. So football season starts pretty early. So, you know, you really consume everything and you're waiting for it and you're excited about it. And I know, Bassett, do you have a young person, brand new person? What you got a son, daughter, something new?
Oh, yeah, I have two. Yeah, I have two. I have a son who's 2.5 and a daughter who's almost 9 months.
Beautiful. Congratulations.
So, yeah, thank you.
You start to get them in the Jets jerseys, and you know I just taught my 20-month-old to say Jets, 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 and he's all pumped up. And, you know, you follow
yeah.
it. You know, I inhale this stuff, and it's a different, and Cal does too. It's a difficult time to be a Jet fan. This has been probably one of the more difficult off seasons, far more difficult than. The offseason after they lost the championship game to the Steelers, which Cal rightly predicted at the time they were not going back the next year. But this has been one of the most difficult off seasons I've ever experienced as a fan. One of those reasons is I was very, very, and if you go back to the archives of the show, it's no secret. I was very anti-Tebow because I don't like what religion and sports mix. But then all of a sudden, he's on my team after the meltdown and the homes and the locker room.
Yeah.
Sanchez. And the kid has a Sanchez onesie. I mean, I'm pot invested here. And then all of a sudden you got Tim Tebow. And I thought the GQ article that came out this week, which he's apparently really upset about because he didn't agree to do it. They used pictures from a previous article where he's in the Jesus pose and stuff. But I thought – I don't know if you read the article. I know Cal did because I sent it to him and made him read it.
I read it.
Yeah, no, but Cal
I glanced at it. I honestly didn't read it end to end, so but I know the high points.
I was gonna say, Cal, did you feel it was a great read? Because I thought it was a great read. Because
it was interesting. I didn't have the strong feelings that you had against Tebow last year. So when they got him, my thought was, this is going to be annoying from a media perspective, but I was from a football perspective. I've been completely intrigued by what they could do with him. So, but the article was very interesting, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it came at it from the point of view, Bassett, about the idea that what do you do when this guy is on your team all of a sudden, and you have to sort of reconcile.
Right.
And the author, I will, you know, gladly concede to the idea that he had a lot of the same feelings that I did. The religious political mixed in with the football and not liking that, and again, you know, not really necessarily having anything against Tim Tebow, but having a lot against what Tim Tebow brings to your team, or the quote unquote idea of Tim Tebow brings to your team. And how he was sort of reconciling that. And then, of course, he meets him, you know, in the first, like, interview. And he's like, and I'll be Tebowing if we win the Super Bowl. You know, like, the guy, you know, Tebow wins more with his character.
Yeah.
But
yeah, he's like, it's almost Tebow time, yeah, or something like that, right? Yeah.
All of a sudden, it's like, if we win the Super Bowl, I will have a 15 jersey and I will be Tebowing. But I sort of likened it, and I'd love to get your take on this. And, Cal, yours too, because we haven't had a chance to talk about it. It's seeming more and more to me like a 100-time magnification of the Michael Vick situation with the Eagles and the dilemma that Eagle fans...
Which is amazing. I mean, when you think about it, that's insane to think about that this is a magnified Michael Vick situation.
Right. It's not from a character standpoint. Obviously, there's no questioning.
No. Just the whole circus. No, I get it. Yeah.
That's exactly it. Like, what, you know, Eagle fans were faced with the dilemma of, like, you know, this guy can probably help us. I mean, he's Michael Vick. But the circus that he brings to town, and Tebow's circus, and I'm going to stop using that word because I hate it. But the coverage that comes with Tim Tebow that brings to your team is like, oh, I don't care if he scores 25 touchdowns, I can't take this crap, you know. but of course I do want him to score 25 touchdowns, and now I've spent my off-season reconciling with the fact that, you know, my in-laws are trying to teach my son how to Tebow, you know, because they're big Tebow fans.
Nice.
Wait, Bassett, what do you make of – and then I do want to talk about and Cal does too. We want to talk about blogging and stuff like that because you wrote that great article about Holmes, and I really want to touch on that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, last thing on Tebow, do you – and we're through camp, thankfully.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is it an overcomable – that's not a word, but we'll try it. Is it a surmountable – there we go – problem for this team? Do you feel that they just need to play some games and win some games and it's going to go away? Is it surmountable?
Yeah, like the whole – you're just so I understand the whole Tebow thing that goes with it. Okay, yeah. I think it's kind of like the Jets, you know, season, you know, past three seasons, like it's this way with any team, right? Like when they're winning, like it's not going to be a problem. If they start losing or Mark Sanchez starts playing poorly, it's going to be a problem. And, you know, and I think what will drive the wedge will be the media. Like the media will drive the wedge if things start going badly. Like they're going to get the anonymous quote. They're going to get the the people who are going to tell them, yeah, we want Tebow, like we're sick of Mark Sanchez. They're going to get the one locker room outsider, who everybody hates. They're going to get him to say something, totally ridiculous, and then it's going to cause, a whole, firestorm. So right, like it is this tough thing, right, where it's funny, and kind of my whole Tebow thing, I'll be quick on it, but I was very dubious of Tebow, and I myself, I would say I share pretty much 90% of what he believes. Like, I pretty much share most of it personally, but I just didn't like him. I didn't like seeing sports, just like you. I'm not a fan of it. And it was actually a guy who, this guy Dan Chanoff, used to work for ESPN, mm-hmm. and he has his own thing now, Quickish, and he runs, and he was a Gator, so that's a big reason. But he grew up in New York. He's Jewish by heritage, and he was the one who convinced me. This was 2 years ago. He's like, Tim Tebow is not a proselytizer. Tim Tebow is just a very genuine, very down to earth person, and he doesn't push that stuff in your face. He believes these things very strongly, and will talk about them if you ask him, but not always. But he just wants to live his life, and that's what he's about. And I was like, oh, okay, well, that seems like something I could get on board with. If he's just genuinely trying to live his life and live his beliefs, that's, not so obnoxious to me. And so, right, so coming into this whole thing, I kind of was like, this is going to be crazy. But at the same time, knowing that, he's not going to come here to divide the locker room. He's just going to come here and do what he's told. But that just tends to be kind of the person he seems to be. Right. I think the biggest issue is, right, if it starts going downhill, it's going to go downhill fast. And I think on paper, we talked about, what he can do in the offense and the Wildcat and all that sort of thing. I believe all those things, he can really help the team in that role. But, the whole kind of human nature of, the way people work in a losing situation and what beat reporters will try and get, I just don't see it ending well. If they start losing, it's not going to end well while Tim Tebow's on the team. I just can't see that. But I agree with you. It's been a long offseason. It has been an absolutely very long offseason. And part of it is because, right, it ended so poorly, and then they get this guy, and then there's so much hype around it. And then it's as a Jets fan, you're almost embarrassed by the amount of coverage that's being, kind of put nationally on TV.
Oh, absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
It's this is ridiculous, And so yeah, it's been a long offseason. So I think we're all ready for some real games.
I think that I respect that. I do respect that. Since the kid has gotten here, you can clearly see that he is genuine, and that he is a good guy. And I do believe, I think a lot of what comes, I think he's even been surprised by it, and he lives Tebow Mania. And I think he's even surprised by the idea that, it's just such a big deal, but we'll see. All right. I want to move on, and ask you about, the article you wrote about, Santonio Holmes after he did the interview with Dave Damashek. And Holmes sort of took on the New York media back in, I guess that was June?
July, actually. A couple weeks before camp, yeah.
Right. And you wrote this really great entry on the jetsblog.com. And Cal and I at the time saw it and were impressed with what you were talking about. And not just either being a fanboy and sort of being sycophanty at the feet of the players, but also asking the questions what are the beat reporters supposed to do? Are they doing their job? Is there a narrative of dysfunction that surrounds the Jets? And one of the things that we, Cal and I talk about a lot on this show is how the teams we love are covered. And that's a big part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, what compelled you to sort of, that's a risky thing for a blogger to do. Especially without a ton of access, and you do beat guys and stuff like that. What was it? What was the straw that broke the camel's back that you felt the need to address it?
You know, and it's funny because, like, I think, yeah, I think that well, one of the big things is, like, I wrote that like super long article, and then I realized, like, God, there's so many things that I didn't even cover in this, or different angles that I didn't cover. And so right, there was another great writer who had a great opinion, and his name is Angel Nevado. So you guys can look him up, like look up the thing he put on Antonio Holmes on there too, because it was a totally different perspective. And his perspective, I want to get this out. Like, it was more of the, like, he said the wrong thing, but I think we understand where he's coming from. And so, right, like, I think when I wrote what I did, it took me a long time. It took me, I think writing that article took me like 6 hours or something, just to kind of get it right, not try and figure out, like, what was I doing and what was I saying, and oh my God, like, am I really going to write this stuff? And I think what the biggest thing that bothers me with Antonio Holmes is, like, I think he just doesn't understand, like, the action that he takes and kind of what repercussions they have. Like, he's done these things, and I just don't think he has a strong sense of, like, that he's going to get the backlash that he's going to get, and that it does matter to people. Maybe it doesn't matter to him or whatever, but, you know, and then also just not understanding, like, how people on the beat, like work and operate, and, you know, I think that this guy, Angel, who I wrote about, like, can you guys hear me all right? Okay.
Yes, we can hear you.
Something. Okay, sorry, something started going weird on my computer.
No, we're good, Brian.
Okay, good. So, it's tough because I think, like, it's almost as if, like, the beat reporters just play this game of gotcha with players, and it's like, yes, did he say some stupid thing? Yes, and the beat reporters will just hold that up as, like, but he said this, but these were his words, but this is what he said. And it's
right.
Like, yeah, but, like, did you even take the time to, like, try and understand what his point was or what he was doing? But, well, it doesn't matter because he said he wants us to be cheerleaders. He never said he wants you to be cheerleaders, but he certainly has, like, a supremely warped sense of what the media does. I mean, I think that's certainly fair. But, you know, I do think that, you know, I mean, the stuff he was asking them to do was, like, he said, like, if you want to be part of the team and you want to feel so important and, you know, you just want to write negative things, like, in some ways, they do that. Like, the thing we saw with Antonio Cromartie, right, like, 2 weeks ago, whatever that was.
Right.
Where, you know, he says, you know, I'm the second best receiver on the team. And then, like, they immediately take that and they run to every other receiver probably. And then they basically catch, you know, Chaz Schoen's in a bear trap and they're like, awesome. now we've got a controversy brewing here. And so, like, you have this game of, like, they just take comments that other people make and they want to get them in front of the players and they want that. They basically want their reaction because they want them to say something stupid. And, you know, and it's like, it's hard to deal with that on a daily basis. I can't imagine how these players do it. And the fact that it's New York and it's so competitive, like, I mean, there's more reporters in that locker room. If you were to go to Cincinnati or go to Jacksonville or something like that, I mean, really, realistically, how many, you know, newspapers are covering that game? Nowhere near as many, or media outlets are covering that game. Nowhere near as many. And then also, like, I mean, let's be honest, like, the level of journalism at Jacksonville or whatever, or, I mean, I don't know, you know, in Arizona, I mean, there's some great journalists there, don't get me wrong, but not all of them went to Syracuse. You know, it's totally different. It's totally different. And they're pitching softballs and, you know, that sort of thing, you know, in Pittsburgh to the players. And in New York, they're basically trying to catch them in every trap they can.
Well, you know what it is? Their job is to sell papers. And everybody knows that the newspaper industry has been struggling for the last couple of years with social media and everything being online now. And everybody's kind of looking for their angle now. And it just seems like, and Steve and I talk about it all the time, it just seems like the narrative with the Jets is inherently negative. It's a negative narrative, and they kind of work backwards. It's like, okay, so the narrative is negative. Now we kind of back into that. how are we going to fit what's going on in camp, even if it's not negative, how are we going to put a spin on it to make it negative? And that's where you see the leading questions to some of these guys to try to, you know, you hate to say it's as malicious as setting them up. I don't want to go that far by saying that, but it just feels like that's kind of the path that they're trying to take them down. And they've got the end, you know, rather than try to develop the story, they've got the story planned. Now they have to kind of figure out their way, how they're going to get there. And I could imagine that's, like you said, that's got to be, it's frustrating as a fan. It's got to be incredibly frustrating as a player on the team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and that was one of the things I think I talked about in the article. I lived in Boston for a number of years, and as brutal as it is for a New York sports fan to live in Boston for like 7 years, one of the things that I really came to respect about you know, now, like, I mean, you listen to sports radio, and it's, you know, it's just bananas like it is in any city, but that you would have beat reporters on the beat who were, you know, and they beat reporters do this now, but I think only because I mean, I don't want to take full credit for it, but I feel like the guys in Boston kind of shame some of the New York reporters to track plays more and do all that sort of thing. like, and I definitely shed light on that. But I think, like, you have guys who are, like, doing detailed analysis, who are, you know, who understand, like, the language, who are talking about what a three technique tackle is, or, you know, whatever, but, you know, like, all this kind of stuff. Like, they're talking about all these amazing things, you know, that are actually, like, informative, interesting, like, help you to understand the game better. And, like, then you go back to New York and it's just about, like, well, you know, what ridiculous thing did Mark Sanchez do, you know, in the last 24 hours, or, you know, whatever, like, you know, who did he bed in, you know, some, you know, meatpacking district, you know, place. It's like, that's what it's about. And that's all it seems to be about. It's like, it tends to drive me a little crazy.
But, you know, the thing is, though, I'm sorry to interrupt. The thing is, we're fans. We're fans of the game.
Right.
We want that information, and we want everything broken down for us that way. But the audience of these writers, are we the minority? And is that why they have to, you know, it's a more broad story if they're going with the kind of the juicy angle, like, you know, like Steve always calls it, the TMZ angle. What is it, you know, maybe we want to see that, and I agree with you, because I would much rather read stories about that. But are more people going to read the story if it's, you know, Tim Tebow running around with his shirt off?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, and we'll never know. Like, to be honest, we'll never know, because they'll never do it. unless they start putting, like, two people on the beat, and one person, like, covers the controversy, and the other person covers the, you know, kind of the I don't know, bits and bytes of how the team is actually going to put together. So, like, but, you know, like, I just get the sense, you know, I mean, like I said, I was only there for a couple of days on the sideline, but you talk to people, like, I talked to other reporters, and, you know, there were some folks there from national media, and, like, they were basically told, like, let's say maybe there was two people that were there from, like, a national media outlet. One was there to cover Tebow, and then the other was there to cover just kind of the general goings on of camp. And I think I talked to two or three different kind of national outlets who were kind of, you know, their editors had told them this is how you're going to do it, and, like, literally that's what they did. And then I watched the coverage on some of these national, you know, things, and it's like, you know, here's Tim Tebow, here's what he did. He was 4-12 in practice, you know, with one touchdown and you know, no interceptions or whatever. Like they would literally break it down and you know, and this is on a national, again, level, not you know, local level. Like, they were breaking down what was going on with that, and that was what they were told to be there to do. Don't do anything else, just cover that. That's all you're there. And so, yeah, I think, unfortunately, we're not going to know. But honestly, like, that's where opportunity for, like, guys like ourselves has you know, opened up the door to that. You know, it's just because they're not doing it, it's their own fault. And that's
exactly
why we're having success doing what we're doing.
And that's exactly where I was going next with this, Brian, because Steve and I, we tend to follow the bloggers more for our day-to-day coverage of the team, because it's written from our point of view. You know, you're a blogger, but you're a fan just like us, and you're writing about
exactly.
the things that we want to know about, that we want to hear about. And I could personally am moving much more away from following the beat writers on a daily basis because of the agenda or what I perceive to be an agenda or just the tone of their writing, and following guys like you more because you keep it straight. You know, you're a fan, and you're passionate mm-hmm. about it. And we get that through your writing and your reporting. And I just, how do you feel like your responsibility is, you know, going forward as a blogger now? Because things are, I think things are clearly shifting in that direction.
Yeah, I mean, well, thanks for saying that. I appreciate that. And, I mean, at the same time, it's difficult. It certainly is. And I think, you know, whereas, you know, I've been doing this since 2004, and for the first 4 years about, you know, I got no access. You know, I would certainly try, but I got nowhere. And certainly, you know, hooking up with SNY has been a big help, and I kind of, you know, I get to kind of backdoor in on stuff that other bloggers don't necessarily get to, which is unfortunate. But at the same time, you know, so I am kind of in this nether world, right, where I'm fan, but I'm also journalist. And I think, like, the way that I've always tried to treat it, and it's certainly changing as we go, but the way I've always tried to treat it is, listen, I am upfront about the fact that I'm a Jets fan. So, like, in at the end of the day, I want them to win. I want things to go successfully for them. Like, do I think every year they're going to have a 12-4 season? No, I don't think that. But at the same time, like, there's definitely things that I notice, and I'm trying to cover what I think it's interesting to me, or what I'm hoping is interesting to other fellow fans. And so, right, like, you know, that's not always getting Tim Tebow 12 posts a day on the blog. It's following some of the other players. It's knowing about this. It's knowing about the, you know, the Australian former rugby player and his life, and, you know, that those kind of things. Like, those are important, and fans love those stories. I mean, who doesn't love the story about a guy who, you know, who is kind of following his dream, you know, at cost of whatever else, you know, could be going on in his life, and, you know, he stands an outside chance to make the team. Like, that stuff's awesome. Like, we love that stuff as fans, but, you know, why would you report on that when Tim Tebow is sure it? So, like,
yeah.
In terms of, like, the responsibility, like, that's the thing. Is like, I guess I really feel like I have to keep up with the news. I have to read all the news and get as best I can. And then, you know, with the limited time that I have, and more limited now with kiddos, like, my job is to basically take the news and say, and this is how this is put into context. Because the thing that most of the beat reporters can't do is they can't opine. You know, they can't say, you know, and remember how this happened and this happened and this happened and this happened in the past, and let's tie it all together. So, like, that's kind of where I've said, okay, like, I'm an opinion journalist. Like, okay, I write on a blog, I'm a blogger, fine. But, like, I try and think of myself as, yeah, I'm a journalist, but at the end of the day, I'm an opinion journalist. Like, I'm trying to, you know, to keep up with the goings-on of the team. Am I there every day seeing things? No, but I'm certainly talking to people, or I do get the chance to, you know, to go sometimes. I'm watching the game. I mean, I've got a better view of the game than the guys in the press box do, from my couch.
I was just going to say, sorry to interrupt, Ryan, but that's, you just hit on something that is so important right now for blogging and social media, or new ways of covering teams and new ways to get your information. Look, we all breathe these teams. We love these teams. Sports are our escape. They're a huge part of our lives. You just hit the nail on the head. You get to editorialize. You're allowed to. You're allowed to put up that we expect you to. You know, we expect
right.
you to put up the news of what's going on with the team and then give your take on it. You know what I mean? I don't expect that out of the beat guy. I don't, you know, that's why I got into it with Andy Martino, who covers the Mets for the Daily News. And I got into it with him on Twitter because, apparently a lot of the beat guys seem to think that their Twitter personality is is an editorial situation, you know, or a columnist, and they get to be a beat guy in the paper. You know what I mean? And I said to him, I said, you're tweeting things you would never say to a player's face after a game, ever. You would never say it. You would never make fun
right.
of Ronnie Cedeno for being a major leaguer. You know, you would never question him being a major leaguer in a
right.
joking fashion to his face after the game in a locker room after he made an error. You would never do it. And so I said to him, I said, you should have two Twitter accounts. You should have one as the beat guy, and then you should have one as the snarky wiseass. You know, this way we know which, you know, I know which one to unfollow. You know, but when it comes to you guys with the blogging, and I really think Matt is you know, Matt Cerrone is obviously
yeah.
sort of like a watermark.
Yeah,
it.
For
and,
sure.
And of course, the Mets have embraced it. The Mets give a lot of access, and that's something Sandy Alderson has done a lot. You know, doing Twitter question and answers with bloggers and doing actual question and answers in person and having bloggers. You know, Ted got to go to you know. Patrick got to go, Flood got to go to spring training this year, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's great. It's smart to do. I have two questions after my little
yeah.
tirade there. One is, do you see the NFL, and the NFL is like really seems from the outside, and Brian and I, Cal and I are older guys, Brian. I mean, we're, you know, we're both in our we're in our early to late 30s. Sort of like Hedwig.
That I'm,
you know?
That I'm an
yeah.
old, I'm an older guy too. This, so.
There you go. So you know we're not kids who have you know been watching this for 5 years. You know we've seen the evolution of how these teams are covered. But my first question is: do the NFL seems really secretive? Have they embraced the blogger? Are they giving you more access? Because that's what it's all about, right? You want access to players mm-hmm. and you want access to stories.
I would say yes and no, and I think it depends on who you talk to. Like I know for a fact that the Jets really don't want, you know, they call them like web guys or you know whatever, like, and they kind of have a catch-all, but they really don't want guys who just write on the web in the press box in the locker room, and so you know that kind of includes myself. So like I'm welcome there. I can go there. I know that I'm not a beat writer. I don't claim to be a beat writer. You know, I don't want to be a beat writer. Like,
right.
But I can get past the, you know, I can get past security if I want to. But most everybody else cannot, who would be in a similar situation, a blogger for a website, you know, generally can't get that access. Now, if you're, you know, Green Lantern Jet, you're part of CBS, you know,
right.
New York, then probably you can get access if you want it. There's ways to do it. I'm sure it could. But for the most part, they're keeping them out, at least in Florham Park. What I would say is that from the league office, they are doing more of that. And I hope that the team picks that up. But it's harder for them, right? Like, you know, like, I mean, I'm good friends with some of the PR folks at the league office. And so if, you know, if something's happening, there's actually this thing next week that's happening in New York. It's like a fantasy football kind of convention. And they've got, you know, Marcus Allen's going to be there and Michael Irvin's going to be there and all these, you know,
nice.
Former great players. I mean, and there's like a list of 20 guys that are going to be there. That, you know, and then you have this cool big convention, and it's, you know, it's free for anybody, but they're, you know, offering stuff to bloggers. And so like the league office is really good at, like, they're doing an event, you know, leading up to the draft. Like I actually, so for instance, on draft day this year, I was in Radio City Music Hall for the actual draft, as a reporter. But before that, like maybe a couple hours prior, they had an event that was, where they brought us into there. They have a brand new office on Park Avenue. They brought maybe 30 bloggers in,
okay.
gave them a whole tour of the office. We sat down in the, it's a command center. It's basically like when anyone is fined, like it's like when players are like fined for like hits, that's where they watch. They have this awesome, I mean, it's like literally something you'd see on like 24. There's like 12 screens. They're using Xbox controllers to like rewind
right.
the stuff. There's, you know, I mean, you know, 12 big screens and then like 40, you know, smaller kind of panels, and it's crazy. So Ray Anderson, who's kind of like the head of that group, officiating and all that sort of thing, he was there, and Roger Goodell was there. And so all these bloggers were asking Roger Goodell questions. I don't know if you guys know who Matt Ussert is for SBN. He used to write for Kissing Stevie Colbert. You know, he asked Roger Goodell, he's like, who are you? Like, we know you're kind of this corporate stuffy, you know, robot, but like, who are you as like a real person? You know, he's like,
right.
What do you like to do? And of course, he gave, you know, a very, you know, I like to spend time with my family. Like,
right.
Answer,
he turned into, he went Jiminy Glick on him.
What does
Roger Goodell do? What does it, because I'm really kind of curious. What does Roger Goodell do?
I would say the league office is being very progressive about those sorts of things. The teams have their own rules, and they make up their own rules as they go. And so I would say, you know, if anybody's listening and you're a blogger and you want to, you know, be part of stuff in the NFL, start with the league office first, because they're probably going to be more receptive than the Jets or Giants do.
Right,
because I think they're just afraid of kind of what these guys do. They don't know if they can trust them. They understand that everybody makes mistakes, and you know, I make mistakes. I made mistakes when I was there last week, but you know, like at the same time, like I think they're afraid of opening the floodgates. You know, what if they let one guy in, they've got to let everybody. What's the distinction for this guy versus that guy? You know, it's tough for them. So, I feel for them, but at the same time, like, I certainly think they need to do more specific events that are geared for that audience. Because there's so many great Jets bloggers. Like, I'm just one. And, I mean, I read everybody. I read, you know, Jets Twit, and I read Gangrene Nation, and you know, I love Green Lantern. I love all those guys. And I mean, because we're all Jets, right, at the end of the day. And I would love them to get more access. But, you know, it's like, that's just not what they're about right now. Unfortunately.
Right. And now Cal has I want Cal to ask you this, because Cal has had this point for a long time, and I want to remind him before we let you go to ask you about this. But Cal has long had a theory. I mean, we've been doing this show over 2.5 years. Has long had a theory about Rex Ryan and about how he can't help himself.
Yeah.
And He has no filter. And actually,
Cal ask.
Go ahead, Cal.
No, Steve, you're doing fine. Just keep going.
No, go ahead. I wanted to remind you, because I didn't want you to forget to ask about it.
I did not forget. No.
Fine.
And PJ reminded, our producer reminded us too, so.
That's a good point.
No, my theory on Rex is he can't help himself. Like you said, he can't help himself. This is just who he is. It's his nature to be, you know, boastful and confident. And what we've seen since last off season is he's trying to temper that a little bit. I don't know if he's trying to change, but he's certainly trying to temper that emotion a little bit. But every now and then it sneaks out a little bit. And he talks about how, you know, they're going to be a top five defense, and you know, but overall, since last January, we have seen kind of like, you know, the kinder, gentler Rex Ryan. Certainly, the more svelte Rex Ryan. He looks great, by the way. I mean, the amount of weight that he's lost, he looks great.
Oh yeah.
You know, do you think that he'll be able to play this part where he doesn't want to open himself up to the criticism that he's taken over the last 3 years with his boasts and his guarantees, and he seems to be making a conscious effort to temper that. Do you think that he's going to be able to continue that, or will the real Rex Ryan eventually rear his head at some point during this year, especially if things start going bad?
It's a great question, and I mean, I do think that, you know, if left to himself. Right, I agree with you. I do think that he struggles with the idea of, you know, not being able to you know, gush about his players, or you know, all of those sorts of things that we've seen him can do or make predictions or those sorts of things. And I think at the end of the day, it comes down to like a couple things. Like, he says all those things because he is confident, and but you know, it's like, you don't get to becoming a head coach of the team or, you know, to becoming a professional athlete without really believing in yourself. And, you know, whether it's you're deluding yourself in the case of certain players or really truly believing, like, I am special, I do have these abilities, I can do this stuff. You know, like, that has to be part of that. Like, if you're a defeatist person, you're probably not going to make it to the level of becoming a professional athlete, because it's you know, there's so many hurdles and so many reasons why things wouldn't go your way and so many chances for you to stop. So like, in some ways, I guess what I'm trying to say is, like I don't fault him for being that way. And I think the fact that he believes in his players as much as he does, it's admirable. It's borderline naive. Like, it is borderline naive. But yeah, like, you know, kind of coming back to, like, can he help himself and what will happen? Like, you know, one of the things he said, and I'm sure you guys read it, if you didn't, go back and look for it, the article about the sensei, did you guys see that? Like, in the middle of July, Jenny Brentis for the Star Ledger wrote this article about Rex Ryan basically kind of having a crisis of, you know, crisis moment after the loss at the end of the season and everything blew up. And he really took that opportunity to reassess what he was doing, where he was going, all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And he had this kind of secret sensei. He won't say who it is.
So
you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yep.
So what I would say is, like, I mean, it sounds ridiculous to say, but I think if he keeps talking to whoever that person is, like, I think that he'll stand a better chance of, like, being accountable to that as the season goes along. But I do think, you know, the one big thing that I've seen, you know, on first press conference he gave at training camp and just some of the stuff he's done in terms of his players since then, it leads me to believe that I do think that he gets it, and he does understand that, like, I was putting undue pressure on my players. Like, I didn't mean it that way. I literally meant it as, like, I believe we're a great football team. I believe we're a team that can win a Super Bowl. But, like, you don't need to tell, you know, the New York beat that, because they're basically, kind of as we were talking about earlier, they're going to take that and run with it and say, look at what he said. Like, you know, it's like he can believe that in his heart, but he doesn't need to tell them that. And what I would say is, like, the beat reporters tested him early. I love Bob Clouder, who writes for Newsday. Like, he's one of the greatest guys to ever get the chance to meet up or talk to him. He's fantastic. He's literally one of my favorite people on the planet. And it was like one of the first days of training camp. He basically was, like, trying to bait Rex into saying something. I can't remember. He said something like, you know, what do you think about this team? Like, he said something that would kind of make it seem like the team was just going to be a mediocre team. And you could see, like, Rex's reaction, like, just physical reaction to the question that Bob asked. He was kind of like, are you kidding me? Like, what are you trying to do? Like, I believe this team's a good team. And, like, you could tell in his physical reaction to Bob's question, he was like, you're trying to, like, poke me here. I guess.
Right. I see what you're doing, and I don't like it.
But at the same time, then he's, you know, talking about how great he is as a defensive coach. It's this tough thing. But, you know, I mean, I do think that he's learning from things. He's not just letting players say, like in years past, he said, you can say anything you want to the media as long as you say two nice things about other players. Like, he's seen the Cromartie thing. And he's coming back and saying, hey, guys, this is a teachable moment. Like, this is a stupid thing. You know, we all realize that it probably wasn't the smartest thing to say. But, like, you can't do that kind of stuff. So he would have never done that, I don't think, in years past. And so he realizes, like, we got to control what we're doing in the public a little bit. I don't want you to not be yourself. I think that's the big thing. Be yourself, but also be considerate of everybody else.
Right. Yeah. I think one of the and we're going to let you go in just a second, Bri, but I think one of the just the last note on Rex is you can watch the press conferences. Like, I've been watching Rex's press conferences for a long time, you know, and they're on NewYorkJets.com. I mean, most of the live press conferences are on, and they have been from training camp this whole time.
Sure.
And it's somewhat remarkable to watch the press conference while seeing your Twitter timeline and then an hour later reading what the beat folks have taken out of his press conference. It's remarkable because you sit there and you see, you know, guys and girls taking stories that or making stories out of what were either innocuous comments or he's clearly, Rex is clearly joking around. I mean, Rex is joking with them, laughing with them. And then an hour later, there's an article about how he said he's the greatest guy ever, you know, or whatever it is. Like the misinterpretation of Lauryn Hill and Rex Ryan is remarkable. I mean, it's remarkable if you actually just sit and watch these, you know, listen to his press conference.
Yeah, I mean, most of his press conferences, you know, a stand-up routine, a bad stand-up routine, you know, like, I love him, like, don't get me wrong, but, like, he's basically telling jokes, you know, one of which gets a huge laugh, and nine of which are just kind of like, it's kind of funny, but it's not that funny. Like, so right, it's like, he's saying a lot of stuff that's, like, because he is kind of just being himself, goofy, you know, kind of funny, whatever, but at the same time, right, they take that, they take it as gospel. You know, he said this, right, exactly,
You can almost see them giggling, you know, like, oh boy, he just gave it to me, beautiful. Because you can hear the reporters, like, I know their voices now. You know, I know what Gary Meyer sounds like, or I know what Manish sounds like, or whatever. And you hear their voices and like asking these leading questions, and they're like, "Oh, please give it to me. Oh, please, 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 please say you're the best defensive coach in football. You did it. Oh, that was great. Oh, that was fantastic." Brian, we're gonna let you go. One last thing, our producer, we were talking about Chinese food at the top of the show.
Yeah,
we didn't get a chance to say our. So we're going to let you bring us back to the top of the show, and we're going to ask you your go-to Chinese food order.
Ooh, man. You know, I am for many years, I was a General Tso's guy, but in the last couple of years, I started going, like, orange peel beef. That's my favorite one.
Ooh.
That's definitely my favorite one. But you know what? Like, I would say, like, I've been turned on to, and I don't really know the dishes, but, like, Sichuan, like real like Sichuan Chinese. I've started like finding a place that actually does like the legit stuff, and I mean it's super spicy and like burn your face off stuff. But like that is quickly becoming my favorite. But yeah, I would say like out of your kind of standard Chinese place, I would say orange peel beef is my favorite.
Beautiful. Well, Brian, thank you so much for and boy, that other stuff is like next level stuff.
Well, guys, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Please, you know, come on again during the season.
Sure.
Hopefully they get off to a great start because it's going to be crazy town here if they lose the first two games. But
absolutely.
And keep up the great work. Thanks, Brian.
Great. Thank you. You guys do the same. Thanks,
Brian.
All right. So there you have it, Cal. All right. Let me do the you like that fade? Wow,
that was
boy, what did we do there, an hour and a half?
We did a lot.
How do you feel?
Sponsors,
the
sponsors are going crazy. I've got 2 hours of commercials to run. The heck is the matter with you people?
We're not getting paid this week.
No one's getting paid.
Go to Chinese, Cal.
Go-to Chinese chicken and string beans.
Get that. Is spicy or no?
A little spicy.
Like spicy.
Chicken string beans over a little white rice.
Any appetizers in there?
Fried dumplings.
Of course. Fried dumplings, pork dumplings, chicken, vegetable?
Pork.
All right. PJ, go-to Chinese food.
Look, I can talk about Chinese food all night. I'm not allowed... I'm not allowed to eat it anymore. This is a little unfair because I'm not allowed to eat it anymore.
At all?
Chinese food, to me, not really.
Right.
What if they steam it? Nice.
I could steam things at home.
But then you
Chinese food, to me, look, I was from Staten Island. Chinese food was basically like salty candy. things that were in syrups or deep fried or super salty. It was just a sensory explosion. Especially when you spend your whole week having a dish of macaroni with every meal.
Right.
It's very, very different.
This is how you spend $60 on Chinese food.
Please, for lunch.
Right. That's the great line in Fatso. Like, you ate $60. $40 of Chinese food.
Which at the time was two bags full.
Right. $40 in 1983 of Chinese food. That's a lot of food. Go ahead. I'm sorry. What were you going to say?
Well, I want to tell you my nostalgic favorite, and then I want to also tell you about the most horrific Chinese food dish I've ever had.
Oh, boy.
My nostalgic favorite, because I have not had it in about 2 years, but it would be the first thing I would order, is a big old plate of pork egg foo young with the brown sauce.
Oh, man. Nice job.
You feel me on that? That's the one that's kind of like an omelet.
Yeah.
But it's got some veggies you've never seen before in there also.
You go egg foo young, Cal?
I can go egg foo young.
Yeah. Really? Took me a long time.
That mystery brown sauce. Ooh, that's good. It's like straight MSG and cornstarch. I mean, it's just so good. And then you take a nap.
And then you're hungry again.
I was never hungry again because I ate so much.
Right.
when you start with five shrimp toast.
A shrimp toast, wow.
Yeah, those were greasy. And then you have a couple of things on sticks. Beef on stick. I was the guy, this is how fat I was, and your brother was with me on this too. We would order, we were the guys who would order the take-home poo-poo platter.
Wow.
Where you get your own sterno lamp. And they give you everything in foil, and you light your own fire on the table.
That's right.
And then you hold everything over the fire. And like, we were like the only guys who would ever do it. You want poo-poo platter? Yes. Yes. Please.
The home kit. Right.
Hey, give us the home kit. You take the little sterno home.
The poo-poo platter home game.
First time, we didn't know how to put out the sterno.
That's right.
Because we threw out the lid. We didn't realize you put the lid back on, it went out.
You put the lid back on. None of you worked in catering, clearly.
No. No, we had no idea.
Right.
There were beverages involved, too.
Sure.
What's the most disgusting dish?
I went with my friend who is Chinese, and she took me to authentic Chinese from her neighborhood, which was Chinatown.
I think they just call it.
And she ordered me, among some other fantastic over-the-moon dishes. I mean, completely great. But the two that absolutely killed me, one was a dish of feet.
Oh, boy.
Pigs.
Wait, sorry, feet?
Feet. Pig's feet, chicken feet. Which she wanted me really to see because she wanted me to understand that this is what her grandmother made her eat. And the other one was squab, which I went for at first until someone else told me, you know, squab is pigeon. And that just turned me right off. I could not eat a New York pigeon. Can't do it. I know where they live.
You just saw it.
Exactly.
Like on your way into the restaurant. You just saw it.
I know this guy. I recognize his face. I'm not eating this. Yeah, so squab and feet. No thank you. But, yeah.
Steve, your go-to.
It's quite simple. It's and by the way, my brother, who PJ is referring to, I think had a minor in Chinese food ordering.
maybe he almost took Mandarin as a second language.
Yeah, did a couple of years down at the Sichuan University. Because my mother is a bona fide, dyed-in-the-wool Chinese food junkie, which meant as a child you got a lot of experimentation. So now, though, now it's small, boneless spare ribs, well done.
Ooh.
Have to be well done.
Like crunchy to the point of like char?
Almost to the point of char. Okay. You got to, you know what you got to do, Cal? You got to find a place that does it right.
Hard to find.
That's it. That's it. You got to find a greasy spoon noodle, greasy noodle spoon that does it right. And fortunately, we found one in Bayside that just they have my order down. So go with that. We go with a dumpling of some sort, always shared.
Of course.
Sometimes fried, sometimes steamed. Depends. Maybe a Friday it's fried, Saturday it's steamed.
Will you get Chinese food back-to-back nights like that?
No, I'm saying if it was different weeks. I've done it.
We've all done it.
Yeah, 4 days worth. and then a small chicken lo mein. I love it. Or Kung Pao. Love Kung Pao. Kung Pao combo with fried rice.
Pork fried rice?
Really like the lo mein, I've noticed.
Pork fried rice. Yeah, because, you know, it's like ginzaloon, you know, Chinese ginzaloon sort of spaghetti. I mean, it's just...
Yeah. Lo mein is a good intro to Chinese food if you have a cousin who's never tried it and is afraid of it. You're like, no, look, it's a bowl of spaghetti.
Yep, no, I brought Teresa, as I was saying earlier, about her being from Texas. Like, they don't know from Chinese food like we know Chinese food. I mean, it'd be like me going the first time I went and ordered barbecue at, like, Salt Lick in Austin, and they're laughing at me. I'm like, should I get the brisket? I don't know. You know, brisket, what's that now? That's the beef? You know, they I didn't know what I was doing.
Does it come with the sauce on the side?
Is this going to be fatty?
Bark. I don't think I want anything to do with bark. I don't know. So she, you know, and she was like that with Chinese food until she met me. And now, you know, she goes, now let's clear this up. While we're here, because it's a sports talk podcast, general, I've heard it many different ways, and my favorite joke is, of course, I served under him for in the Clone Wars. But is it General Tso's, General So's, General? I've heard General Chow's. Can we come to an agreement on this?
I go General Tso.
Okay. Peach.
It's $8.99. I don't care what you call it.
General T Bags Chicken. I don't care what you call it.
I know what it is. It's the awesome chicken with the peppers that you don't dare eat.
That's right. That's right. That was a big had to advise Teresa. No, don't do that.
Right.
If you, I know you. Right. I know you like spicy stuff, but you'll be very angry.
These are actually weapons.
That's right. That these are weapon grade uranium. You
That's
know what I used
why
to be,
he's a general.
I used to be a big mushu pork guy. Very big.
Ooh, build your own.
With the pancakes and the build your own. That was now you're combining like three things. Now you have like Chinese food in there, you have tacos in there. And then you have, you know, like a noodle sort of feel in there as well. And also sweet. There's sweet in there somehow.
Yes.
No one's mentioned soup yet.
I'm not a soup.
And I don't think anybody starts without some soup.
Well, I don't do it.
You don't do any of the soups? No hot and sour?
Don't do it.
No wonton? No wonton egg drop?
Used to love both wonton and egg drop. Can't do it now. I don't have time.
You know what I do? I do a nice chicken rice soup in the winter sometimes.
By itself, though, or as a starter?
As a starter.
Really?
That's girly.
Which is, yeah, it's not Chinese food.
Wow.
That's what I do.
You didn't have to do them like that, Peach.
No, he's right.
It's a little fey. That's okay. It's all right.
Anybody with the shark fin? Anybody do that?
No.
No.
No, no, no. I don't eat fish, like, regularly. I'm certainly not going to trust a greasy noodle down the street.
I'm not asking you if you do the blowfish. I'm asking
right.
about shark fin.
Anybody do the piranha? Now you guys eat sushi, right? I'm not. I know that's Japanese food, but I'm switching gears a little bit.
We could do a whole Pan Asian cuisine night.
Well, we are. I mean, we talked about the Jets for an hour and a half, but you know, why not wrap it up with this is the fun load.
By the way, guys, excellent questions.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, you know, if you guys were bombing, you know that I would have interrupted and started asking about cookies or something. But I thought it was
Ryan Bassett. Stuff. What's your favorite movie?
That's right. Superman 2, superior, inferior, or solid? We should have had him play solid.
We should have had him play solid. We should make that a rule.
We're if having you're a guest.
Yeah, they should have to play rated or overrated, underrated song. There it is. All right, hey, let's do the Chinese food edition.
Do it.
It's like Extreme Makeover. Home
and let's do the Chinese food edition of overrated, underrated, solid. I think we've done it.
The fortune cookie.
I'm contractually obligated to play the music three times.
Right.
Yes. Fortune cookie.
That's
overrated,
great.
Underrated, or solid?
Well, let me ask you, since you mentioned sushi, do you do sashimi? Do you ever do it no rice?
No. I don't do sushi, period. No.
Oh, I thought you were bringing that up because you like sushi.
No, I was bringing it up because I know you guys. I know you do, PJ. I want to find out if Cal likes sushi.
Nah, girly sushi again.
Yeah.
California roll.
That's legit.
A little salmon on top of the white rice.
All right. You will do that, though.
That's as far
salmon's
as I go.
Legit.
Yeah, that's... I won't even get the crab or whatever. No.
But I'll tell you, but you know what? Sushi aficionados make fun of me all the time.
Oh, you're you would be a lightweight sushi guy.
Oh yeah.
Why?
But you eat it. I'm in the tempura class.
You might
get a little fried. So what?
Yeah, but that's all I'll eat. I can't get stuff from a sushi place. That's it. I get tempura and I get beef and chicken negamaki. I will do.
That's good. You know why I eat sushi? And you're gonna laugh. Well, you know, I won't laugh. You're gonna say typical, PJ. Because when I eat enough sushi,
typical PJ,
I feel mighty. It is such a blast of protein. After I eat a big plate of sushi, I could probably lift a car.
Wow,
it's amazing. It's probably that plus the wasabi.
I have seen you after a session at Monster Sushi. Remember we used to go there all the time, Peach?
That's a place to get silly.
Right.
Because they pride themselves in serving you more than is probably healthy to consume.
Cal, that was a pre-band rehearsal spot for them.
Monster Sushi?
Monster Sushi.
Monster Sushi. Formerly Godzilla Sushi till they were sued.
Right. 23rd and 6th, maybe, Peach?
Yeah, 20 right in that neighborhood, 23rd, yeah. Right around there.
And Cal, he used to come to band rehearsal, like fly in the door, like, excuse me, Lois, Jimmy, we have band rehearsal.
Was he eating the HGH chicken?
He had the Milky Cabrera.
There's something
chicken.
About it, Cal. I'm telling you, there's something about it. You get yourself a good plank of a spicy tuna roll or some yellowtail.
Yeah.
The only word I could think of, you feel mighty.
I can't do it. Good for you. I've tried.
You get sushi stomach.
I do.
Sushi stomach is a real phenomenon where the stomach calls the brain and says, I'm sending this back. And the brain's like, no, it's good. Dude, it was $20. Don't send it back. Keep it
down. Do you know how much we paid for this?
Yeah. No, your brain always has to do the pep talk.
Yeah. You do realize we're eating raw fish. Look, listen, be quiet. Do you see? $22 for this roll.
Right.
It's two pieces of fish. I want to go back to we're about to run out of time for the live show. So if you're listening to the live show, thank you so much for tuning in. We're going to go into overtime now. You can check it out on the web. And also, thank you so much to everybody who's been downloading the show. A lot of people are downloading the show. It's awesome. We're having a blast doing it. Please keep doing it. So we're going to go into overtime now and answer Cal's question. And you'll just have to wait till you're on the treadmill. To overrated, underrated, solid for the fortune cookie. So I'm going to give you a little teaser. I'm going overrated.
Wow.
Anyone? I think the fortune cookie is way overrated.
EJ?
I prefer the almond cookie. I'm going to agree. Fortune cookie's overrated.
And I'll make it the trifecta. It's overrated and excellent call on the almond cookie, PJ. That is completely underrated.
And I'll tell you this. My wife makes the almond cookie.
Go on.
In batches of 100. I can get you boxes of the almond cookie.
I'm listening.
With superior almonds on top, too.
Can you get him personalized boxes of the almond cookie?
My wife blanches her own almonds.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, this is a special lady.
Is it getting warm in here?
I do believe
I have the vapors. My dad had the greatest, and he really did have this and do this. My dad had the greatest fortune cookie fortune. He carried it in his wallet because he got it, and people would not believe that he got it. And he carried it in his wallet for a really long time. It was very funny. And that was, you will be hungry in an hour. That was the fortune in his fortune cookie. And it was from a Chinese buffet, by the way. Not a regular Chinese place. It was from a Chinese buffet.
That's
which crazy. I thought was super ironic. You will be hungry in an hour.
I will tell you, though, if you make your own fortune cookies, if you're that kind of guy like I am, I have a problem. They can be excellent.
You make your fortune cookies. What's going on over there?
Yeah, well, that pasty dough that you actually fold into that little envelope can be much better than what you currently get in the little, you know, individually wrapped awful cookies that come out of Ohio.
Yeah, I think it's... has the heartbeat of the Asian American community.
Yeah, no, it's a shame.
In Centerville, Ohio, just really, they have their finger on the pulse.
They're a couple of years
old,
too.
You live
too,
in Brooklyn. Can you name an Asian bakery?
Right, that's a good point, too, Cal. And those are two great points. They're a couple years old. By the time they get to us, you know, the fortune in there is like, Nixon will not be a great president. But also, yeah, how many Asian American bakeries do you see? Now they make that. Now let me throw this out: overrated, underrated, solid. The sweet roll. Because now you go down to like Chinatown, you get or sweet bun. That's what I'm thinking of.
Chow Shu Bao.
If you say so.
Come on.
I've only had it as the sweet roll.
The chow shu bao is the breast of food.
Good night, everybody.
You must go to it. You must feel its softness and warmth, and you must love it.
What
is it? The bosom of Chinese food.
Have you never had one of those, Cal?
I've never, no.
A sweet bun, right, it's called? Peach?
I believe I've told you what they're called.
All right, but for those of us who, you know, didn't do 3 years.
Yeah, it's in the bun category. Sometimes they're filled with a chopped sweet pork. Sometimes they're filled with red bean paste. Sometimes
Doughy
is anything. You've never, the Italians never came up with anything as doughy as this.
And bite your tongue. And steamed, right?
Steamed, or you know, sometimes a little bit flash baked because they get that crust and that color around it.
I've only had, you know where I had one, Cal? Down on Main Street in Flushing.
Oh, well, of course.
Right. I was doing a job down there, a deposition or whatever. Me and the court reporter went out at lunch, and he's like, I got this great place. They have the best sweet buns ever. We went and had one. It does not look unlike a breast.
Thank you.
He's not wrong there.
when you get a couple of these things, you're kind of going, Mommy.
I'm going to go with underrated. But they have entire places that are built on those, right?
Oh, yeah.
Right. It's like
House of Sweet Buns.
That's right. It's not an IHOP. That's all they do, though.
Yeah, because these places specialize in making these fillings that will just knock you out.
Right, they have like 30 different kinds of them.
Yeah. Oh.
Huh.
Let's do this. Overrated, underrated, solid, the Chinese buffet. Because if you grew up on Long Island, or even in Brooklyn or Queens, you like the Chinese buffet.
Yeah.
Ralphie Panette? Who's the comedian?
John Panette.
John Panette. That's the famous, you've been here 4 hours, right? The Chinese buffet. Pretty good.
I've moved away from it over the years. Just from a cleanliness standpoint.
Ooh. Didn't think of it that way.
I got to say, for me, it's a young man's game. And a very old man's game.
That's right.
But after my 20s, I started to shun the buffet.
Did you get the ice cream at the Chinese buffet?
Always.
Oh,
how about the pudding?
The pudding, and right, the soft serve ice cream. They always had a soft serve ice cream machine, which when you're like 15 is like, all right, so you're telling me there's all the Chinese food I can eat. There's like chicken lo mein out the door and soft serve ice cream that I pour myself.
All for $3.99.
Now
what they do is they stack those little dishes next to the ice cream machine, the little 3-inch bowls. But you go over there, you go to the dessert part with the 9-inch plate.
And you play Tom Carvel.
Yeah.
That's a little
Venetian hour.
And you never eat the Jell-O with the fruit in it.
Ever.
Sure I do.
Oh, you did?
So you're the one.
You're the guy.
I went around the world on those places.
Yeah, you much like John Panette, they saw you coming.
Yeah.
Like a 22-year-old PJ in college, like up in Binghamton, they must have been like, look, this guy doesn't get in here anymore, all right?
They draw the shades and pretend like they're closed.
Right.
Shut the lights, he's coming.
Right. Oh, we had a big
Everybody
film,
quiet.
You go back to your car.
Do me a favor, here he comes, get the Jell-O out of here. All right? You frequent a place too much and you're a little too big when they like pull like 7 items when they see you coming.
No, we don't have crab legs today. What do you mean you don't have crab legs?
What are you talking about? Beef with broccoli? That's it? That's all you got? Yes, that's correct.
Maybe that's why I turned away. They were wise to me.
I'm going to give you another. I'm going to give you guys another one. I had buddies. We used to get Chinese food at work or whatever. Like once a week, they would order it. For lunch and stuff. And I had guys that would always get, and I saw this in Brooklyn too when I moved to Brooklyn, chicken wings.
Yes.
What's up with that? Like fried chicken wings.
Yeah, or the chicken fingers. Even.
Or the chicken fingers
they,
from
they
Chinese
They taste
fingers.
Very different because they use the different oil.
I never did it.
Yeah, they taste very different.
Was I missing something? Was it like the anti-KFC? Was it like...
It was, right, it was nowhere near KFC. It was a completely
different Because I'll never do it now.
Different flavor.
Really? Guys,
you should probably stay away from chicken wings as a rule. I have a friend who ate chicken wings because there was nothing else good in his cafeteria, he claimed. He ate chicken wings for his first month at college. First month, 30 days. It was his lunch. He would go to the cafeteria and only get chicken wings.
Is it Morgan Spurlock?
Well, he had liver failure. And they blamed the chicken wings. They're like, you can't eat that many chicken wings, sir. That's too much chicken skin. You can't do it.
What a stunning turn of events.
You can't get a skinless wing, as far as I know.
And in other news, the sun came up the next day while he was... You can't do that. The man ate bacon at every meal.
Yeah, you can't eat chicken wings at every lunch. You can't.
Wow. These were probably not good chicken wings either.
No.
I mean, this was,
These were the kinds you get in a college cafeteria.
Right. You're up in Binghamton, New York. For those
they weren't
don't
poisoned.
Know.
I mean, they were just what they were, and you can't eat that many chicken wings. No.
They weren't Tyson, were they?
I have no comment on that.
The Tyson people also have no comments on that, by the way.
That's right.
They've called in. All right, we should wrap it up. What do you think? We good?
I like how when we go to extra time, it's like overtime soccer, where it's so arbitrary.
It is. It's good. It feels good.
It's
you
injury
just go
time.
Until you're done.
Right. It's injury time.
Like, hold on. But I want to go back. I want to go all the way back to the beginning of the show, just before you go.
Yes, Lily. Yes, the teeth.
Oh, no.
Because Cal mentioned retainers. And I want to see your retainers. And I want to raise you. Four screws.
Oh boy!
Into the jaw.
Oh my God!
That's what she had today. Actual machine screws.
Oh my goodness!
Into the poor girl's jaw.
So she was happy today.
She's more of a trooper than I could ever be.
Yeah, she's a champion. You said that. You said she'll take this much better than me and her mother will.
Yeah, we suspect, my wife and I suspect, that she's going to be either a great writer or like a great stand-up comedian. Because she's got all these years of, you would not believe what happened to me the first 10 or 15 years of my life. And all she has to do is just tell the stories.
Right.
This
That's
kid
right.
has been through every medical procedure, of the non-life-threatening variety.
Right, thankfully.
She does not complain.
Nope. That's unreal. Yeah, they had to pull her teeth back, Cal, and
yeah.
Oh boy.
They're actually pulling her teeth up into her jaw because they actually dropped down too low because she was a thumb sucker. So stay away from that thumb, everybody.
Yep. Yep.
You see, if Wesley goes after it, you hit him with a brick. The brick does less damage.
I have this great jet brick. It's for the Jets. It's like styrofoam or like, you know, rubberized styrofoam that you're supposed to throw at the television for a bad call. This is like a bad call in the game. And you throw the jet brick at the television because you've always wanted to throw a brick at the TV. And I'll never forget. I had it and we were watching a big Jet game. It was years and years and years ago. I mean, I want to say like 15 years ago. So it might have been the playoffs in 98, Cal. On the run to the AFC Championship game.
Oh, the Denver game?
Yeah, and I'm watching a game with Scott, and he had one too. My mother had gotten them as like stocking stuffers for us or whatever. So we're watching the game. We have all the jet gear out, and Scott had just gotten like the – you remember the old Mitsubishi projection, like big screen TVs?
Yes.
Like this was like a big deal. Like he and his wife had just gotten it. It's like – it was a bad call in the game, and I took the jet brick and I threw it at it. Wow. Wow. PJ's known my brother a long time, as have you, Cal. Never loses his crap. He lost his crap. Are you out of your mind? Are you? What is wrong with you? What are you, nuts? Do you know how much that television costs? Are you crazy? Scott, it's the bad call. It was a bad call. Brick, it's not. It's made of rubberized. Like, I don't even care about the money. I don't even care about the money. You just gave me that stupid. it was so great. I didn't even throw it hard. What's that?
I'll bet it put the game in perspective for him.
took him
man,
literally
I would pay to see video of that.
Oh, it was just so great. it was just like complete. Oh, like we're like laughing and joking. Oh, what a terrible call, and we're all pissed off. And I grab this bad call brick and I like throw it, and it hits like the corner of this mammoth television. By the way, you could have driven a Chevy through this television; you wouldn't have done anything to it. You know what I mean? It was, you could have taken a sledgehammer to it, and the TV would have been like, "Okay, yeah, what else you got? Still projecting." And I just said through this little rubberized brick thing. It did nothing. Are you nuts? Do you understand the technology involved? I did not. I did not understand the technology involved.
Clearly.
I still have it. I still have the bad call brick. Maybe I'll bring it out, Cal.
Well, let's hope you don't have to use it.
Now if I threw it at his television now, he'd freak out even more. Ridiculous 65-inch flat screen, thin panel.
Plasma all over the floor. What are you doing?
I'm just sitting there with a brick in my hand. It was a bad call.
That could be like a fun thing to do. Like every time we go to visit Scott, bring something to throw at his TV.
We bring bad call bricks. We just throw them at his TV.
Let's test his reaction time.
Like, what are you doing? What are you guys doing? All right, let's wrap it. TJ, final on those.
I have not really slept in 4 days. I've been working on the PGA. I missed my opportunity to buddy up with Nance. So I'm just going to go and sleep.
Very good. Well done. Tell Jimmy Nance we said hello.
I will.
If you do catch him. Cal, final on those.
I was watching the Jet preseason game last week, and my daughter, who has no interest in football whatsoever, or so I thought, wandered into the room, saw the Jets on the television, and exclaimed, "Oh, cool, Jets!" And I thought I went to heaven. Right then and there.
That's great.
Wow. I'm not even gonna. That's it. Good night, everybody. Wow. Cal wins.
It was just like WTF.
Congratulations, Cal. You won the final on those.
You did.
I wasn't trying to win.
I know you weren't. That's the beauty part of it. I'm not even putting an entry in. We'll be back next week with an all-new Ready to Unload. Special thanks to Brian Bassett from thejetsblog.com on the SNY.TV network of blogs. And boys, we're getting very close to having a sponsor. So check that out coming up soon. All right.
Drop your F-bombs now, everybody.
We'll see you next week.